Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting shows from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark Lavillier. For this hour of drama, later on we hear the story of Dr. Kildare with Lou Ayres and Lionel Barrymore. Right now it's the Philip Morris Playhouse from April 1st, 1949 on CBS, with talented actors Kathy and Elliot Lewis, Alan Reed and Ken Christie, under the direction of William Spear, in the David Ellis play, Apology.
Johnny presents The Philip Morris Playhouse, produced, edited, and directed by William Spear. Tonight's star, Elliot Lewis. With Elliot Lewis as star, we bring you Apology, tonight's production in the Philip Morris Playhouse.
He could be anywhere down there. He could be in the lobby asking the room clerk. He could even be in the elevator or walking down the hall to my room. Maybe even... Who is it? Who is it?
Mr. Buzicki, it's the bellboy.
Just a minute. I was lying on the bed.
The clerk wants I should ask you if you're going to stay over the weekend because he wants to know because there's a Wisconsin party coming in which will take most of the rooms.
Well, I haven't made up my mind yet.
What can I tell a room clerk?
Tell him I haven't as yet made up my mind.
What can I tell him you'll tell him?
Tomorrow morning.
He'd like to know tonight.
I'll let him know tomorrow.
Checkout is noon.
I know. There's a sign on the closet door.
Be surprised how few people ever read them signs.
I read them.
And good night.
Good night.
I'll tell him you'll tell him tomorrow.
Funny. How his just being so big scares me. Size wouldn't count. That's why it's foolish to worry about a thing like that. Because if he ever caught up with me, size wouldn't have a thing to do with it. Only the index finger on his right hand is off, with which he'd pull the trigger. Well, it's all psychological, I suppose. The mind has got to work, I guess. Funny how a man can have no courage, absolutely no courage at all, for one entire lifetime, and get reckless one day. Just something in him, maybe all the times he should have got angry and never did. And that day, that minute, that second, he does something. If anybody'd have asked me if I was planning a thing like that... Still, who can know himself? To see her lying there with the little wine glass in her hand when a minute, a second before, she was her usual self.
Montana!
What's wrong with that?
I wouldn't go to Montana if you carried me there dead.
What's wrong with Montana?
I'd rather be dead.
Is it such a terrible place?
I wouldn't know. I've never been there.
Then how can you possibly know?
Do you think I haven't a very good idea of what you have in mind when you want to send me off like that?
Because I ask you to take a little vacation.
To imagine that a girl like that would say anything, would walk by, would even stay on the same side of the street as a small-time, small-timer like you is enough to make me laugh. This is an imagination.
Do you want to be sensible or lose your temper?
When I think of the way he tried to talk me out of it, the way Pa begged me, he got down on his hands and his knees and begged me, please, this fella is no good. I can hear his voice telling me, but I was young.
Your Pa is not always infallible.
A person can be too young, you know that? Much too young. It's only later, when it's too late, that you think back and remember how right your father was when he told you.
Your Pa was wrong.
You can stand there and tell me that? When you have no idea in your head but shipping me off someplace I don't know where, so you can paint the town yellow with somebody that you couldn't even get a date with?
If I can't even get a date with her, what are you so worried about?
That's a real question. That's a real intelligent question.
Ida... If the doctor said Montana and you have confidence in him, why do we got to argue like that?
She wouldn't even look at you.
How do you know?
See? You admit it.
I want to know how you can hate me so much as to think she wouldn't be the slightest bit interested.
Because she wouldn't be interested.
What's interested you can interest her.
I was young.
This is so silly. We're talking in circles, Ida.
Oh.
What's the matter?
You aggravated me.
What is it?
My pills. Top shelf.
Lie down. Here.
Don't you dare. Don't you dare touch
me. I'm not touching you. Lie down.
I'm as comfortable as I ever will be, right? Right here. What are you standing there for?
Top shelf. Top shelf. I had saved them up, like everything inside me, in green capsules. I never intended. How could I have such a thing in my heart that I'd ever think of doing such a thing? But it always made me feel better when I'd make it up at the drugstore and put it in the box. I felt better when I got through work mixing the stuff, just like I mixed 1,000 prescriptions every day of the week and putting it away. For a rainy day, I told myself, someday when I got mad enough. Well, it wasn't my head or my heart, I can tell you that, but something, my hand, maybe. And I took her the green capsules instead.
What are these?
Dr. Ross was in today and asked me to change her prescription.
Green?
What difference does the color make?
Never told me about a new medicine.
Would I make up anything for you that wouldn't be good for you?
If you'd send me to Montana.
Now, study yourself. Really now, Ida, study yourself. Be objective a little. You've got me murdering you now.
What does it taste like?
Capsules don't taste.
All right.
Here, I'll get my hand under your pillow.
Don't touch me. I'd rather die than have you touch me.
All right. See, I'm not touching you.
Green, I never heard of anything like it. Where's the water?
You make such a fuss over a little pill.
Never mind. Give me the glass.
You'll feel much better.
I could taste it.
You only think so.
I could. Myron. I feel funny again. Not like before. Funnier.
I'll get you water.
No. Let me.
I'll get it.
Glass. Water.
You'd think a man would feel guilty. After studying what such a chemical can do to a person's system, knowing the entire process, you'd think just a little regret, maybe, would pass through him. No. I was glad, that's all. I stood and looked down at her. I smiled. I felt evil. Humphrey Bogart. For a minute, I pretended I was him. I put my hand in my coat pocket. You know how he does, with just the thumb sticking out. No gun in there, actually. But you would swear he's got it. But be realistic. You can't hide a thing like that. First-degree murder, and poof. So I put her in bed. I washed out the little wine glass, and I packed a few things. Can you imagine passing a policeman? They're not the same anymore. Instead of looking at the brass buttons, you're looking at the gun. But more than anything, I was afraid of him. He'd get me. If any man was violent, it was certainly her father. Take, for instance, like a few weeks after Ida and me were married.
Sit down.
I'd rather stand, thank you.
In my house, when I ask a man to sit down, I intend to have him sit down. Sit down. Much better.
Sit down yourself, why don't you?
I prefer to stand. To get the brass tacks, Ida tells me you quarrel.
Sometimes in the best of families.
Whose fault was it?
Well, Pa, you know her temper.
Never lost without reason. What did you do to her?
Nothing. Haven't you ever fought with your wife?
My differences with my wife have nothing whatever to do with your mistreating my daughter.
She must have really bent your ear.
Listen, you. I want you to know something. Look up at me. Now, you listen. I didn't want you to marry Ida. I told her about you. I see your kind every day. I don't know, maybe you look better behind the counter with a white uniform on talking to the doctors. But with or without the white uniform, I know you.
What did she tell you about me?
Never mind. I'm doing the talking.
I'll see.
I'm doing the talking is right. Ida isn't used to a home life of quarreling and bickering. We never did it here, and we don't intend that you should make of her a nervous wreck.
I don't know why I have to explain my family problems to you in the first place.
Listen to me, you.
Put me down. Let go.
I hold you at arm's length like the little piece of nothing you are, and I tell you, if I ever catch you treating my daughter as anything but the way a gentleman should treat her, I'll tear you in little bits. Do you think I can do it?
Please.
Do you think I can do it?
I think you could.
Much better. Just remember, the little tiny bits.
B Between him and the police, therefore, there's very little hope. Very little. As a matter of fact, it's hard to decide which would be the worst way to die, which I am more afraid of. Of course, Pa. Much more. The law has logic and a little reason to it, but Pa is nothing but an animal, a wild animal. If he should ever get me... Yeah. I'll leave tonight. How can a fugitive from justice like me stay in one place? Because a man has an intolerable wife, he is a criminal. Think of the injustice. Think. If it were a war and she were the enemy, I would have a medal. Why haven't I the intestinal fortitude to run to the police and give myself up? Why? Because even with such a rotten place, cracked plaster and unsanitary, it's life. And the other? Death. Listen to the philosopher while they wait to kill me. I've got to get out of here. Nobody. Ooh, my bag. Yeah, maybe I should stay here. No, got to go. Never stay in one place too long. He's in the lobby talking to the bellboy. What'll I do? Nothing I can do.
Run, you fool.
Run. Where? The back stairs. Run. This is why I was born, so I could take my place behind a garbage can in an alley. Lord knows what diseases. And I didn't have sense enough to even bring my top coat when I left the house. But Pa, I lost him all right. The city should do something about alleys. Well, do we sit here and talk to ourselves, or do we start looking for a place to go? There's a place to go. What a beautiful place. It's funny how a man frees himself from one thing and gets chained up in something else. It just wasn't meant to be that I should see her again. Do you know that there might be a chance to see her? Do you know that? Who but Ida knew I had interest in Anne? Not even Anne herself. Can you imagine being so much in love with a person and never so much as saying hello? Maybe if it were Hetty Lamar, a man isn't fit to touch the hem of a skirt, but a common, ordinary waitress. Wait a minute. Not so common, not so ordinary. I could go right to her place. Couldn't be more than a mile from here. Agreed. I followed her home so many times. A man who has the courage to kill certainly has the courage to talk to the girl he loves. How beautiful she is. And I've never been so much as 10 feet close to her. I never even smelled her perfume. A murderer should certainly have courage enough to have smelled her perfume. I'll knock. She'll open the door. I'll come in, close the door, put my back to it, my hand in my pocket, with the thumb out. That funny little look on my face. Smiling, maybe. I've killed my wife. Your life is nothing to me. The chair don't get any hotter for two murders than for one. Who's to tell what a girl is liable to do when she's afraid? Who's to tell how far fear is from love? Who's to tell? An emergency. Quick, open.
Who are you?
It's John of the restaurant. Please, Anne.
John.
Open. Open.
Hey, I don't know anybody.
Get back in there. I said get in. This is a gun.
What do you want?
Do you read the papers?
What do you want?
I ask you a question, and when I ask a question, I expect to be answered. Sit down. Much better. Now, do you read the papers? Turn on the lamp.
Sometimes.
I'm Myron Frayne, alias Buzicki. I killed my wife.
Oh, look,
and do you know why?
Why?
Because I loved you.
What?
How does it feel to have someone killed over love of you?
Boy, I
own the drugstore next to the restaurant you work in.
Look, maybe I ought to go downstairs, get us something to drink. I'll be right back.
Sit down. Do you also know another reason I killed my wife? Because now that I'm a murderer, you'll talk to me.
What are you going to do?
Something I should have done a long time ago.
Please.
I'm going to kiss you. Or better, you will kiss me. Come here.
Kiss you?
A kiss or a bullet. Your choice.
All right. I'll kiss you. Okay. Sit up, bright boy.
You?
Too many movies is your trouble.
No.
Killed your wife for me. A gun. I get a joker like you once a month. Always big stories.
And?
Miss Palmer. I remember you now. I seen you follow me home a couple of times.
But I really did.
Yeah,
kill...
yeah. Now, look. Look, I'm not calling the cops this time. It's just because I got a heart that's bigger than my head. You probably got some mare at home that bops you down daily. Go on. Get out of here. Go on. If I ever see you again, I'll personally beat your brains in. Judging by your size, it wouldn't be too hard to do.
Lose yourself in a crowd. Times Square. Lucky my face is so ordinary. I look no different than 50,000 others who are riding around in the subways. My description could fit so many people. They'll have a tough time. Ooh, what a terrible girl she was. What a terrible girl. So hard. Hard as steel. But just like a lot of things, if you get up close, there's very little romance left. Her complexion isn't even what might be expected. Why should she believe me? A killer. Do I look the type? Of course not. After a period of respectability, a man can do anything and still appear respectable. It's a habit, more or less. Yeah. Being on a subway makes you think you're going somewhere, because a passenger who gets on when it's heading downtown doesn't realize that the train turns around and goes back uptown. He thinks it's going someplace, whereas it's only going in a circle.
Look out who you're... Well, hello, Mr. Frayne.
Who, me? Not me.
Why, Mr. Frayne, what are you talking, Mr. Frayne?
No, look, I've never been in New York before.
Your name, Frayne?
Buzicki.
Let's see your identification.
What is this?
Your identification, please.
I left my wallet at home.
Yeah. You come down with me.
A man has the right.
They charge. Murder. Your lawyer's here.
What? Mr. Lauritsen. Good to see you, Lauritsen.
Myron.
10 minutes.
Yeah. Myron, you didn't do this horrible thing.
Yes.
Temporary insanity. It's your only chance.
Maybe.
I'm friendly with a wonderful psychiatrist. He'll give you an examination.
I saved up the poison for weeks. You see how easily I admit it. It's because of the hate I felt for her.
Terrible, just terrible.
You don't know, Lawson, what it's been like these last few years.
Just terrible.
Coming home every night to such a woman.
Temporary insanity.
How can you say that? I saved up the poison for weeks.
Can they prove it?
They can prove I mixed it. I'm a registered pharmacist. They can prove it was premeditated.
Very bad, Myron. Very bad. I'm so sorry for
Listen
you.
To me, Lawson. Whatever you do, don't let that ogre come near me.
Who?
Pa, my father-in-law.
Oh.
He'll kill me.
Oh, I see. I can very well understand.
You won't permit him near me.
I'll caution the police.
He'll kill me.
I'll caution the police.
And don't let me out of here.
On a murder charge? How could I get you out?
Habeas corpus.
Oh, you always listen too much to radios. There's no bond on a murder charge.
Then he couldn't get me out of here by paying my bond.
Never in a million years.
Thank you, Lawson.
Now, I've got my notebook. Now, Myron, every detail. Don't hold back, Myron.
I know. Everything may be important in a case like this. Afraid? I was afraid since I was 1 year old. Maybe even before. But not now. Not anymore. Being afraid was the only protection I ever had. But now it's not up to me. Now somebody in authority will decide when I'm going to die in the duly appointed place.
Your lawyer again, Frayne.
What? Mr. Lawson, what?
Myron, your father-in-law, a wonderful man.
What did he do?
A genius of a man. How he did it, I still don't know.
Did what?
The police examined everything, Myron. None of your fingerprints were on the box, none on the glass.
How could it be? I mixed the stuff.
It's used for some disease, isn't it?
The poison? In small quantity.
He has it. The disease. He said you mixed it for him.
Oh, but what about Ida? How?
It said poison, the label. She took it. He said she was despondent. Your father-in-law...
Oh, no, but don't they see? Don't they see? He went up there. He was the one that found her. Before he left, he made it look like it was suicide. So in case the police picked me up, I'd be released and he could get at me. Don't you see?
Regardless, he did it, and you're a fool if you open your mouth.
But with modern crime detection...
Listen, Myron, if you open your mouth, I'll refuse to take your case.
He'll kill me.
You crazy fool, you're free. Just shut up.
It'll be 10 times worse with him.
Go then, get away from him, leave the country, do something. At least the law isn't after you.
I won't have a chance.
Remember what Lowetson said. Just shut up.
How can it be that I'm standing on a street again? Me, a murderer. It's a crime to public safety that I should be allowed to walk around. That Lowetson, just so they wouldn't say he lost a murder case. Just so. So.
Myron. Get in the car, Myron.
All right, Pa.
I'm very proud of myself.
You should be. It was remarkable.
I came up afterwards. She was lying there. I started out. I almost collapsed right then and there. But I turned back. I knew you were stupid. I knew the law would pick you up, so I fixed everything. I covered all your traces. I'm very thorough, Myron. I never slip up when I set my mind.
The law should take care of me. You shouldn't.
That wouldn't be enough for me.
I would get the electric chair.
Too quick.
Please, please.
I can tend to everything sitting right here in the car.
Please, have a little mercy.
Yell for it.
Mercy. Mercy.
I'm very thorough, Myron. Very thorough indeed. Get up.
I can't.
Tell me now, Myron. What did she mean to me? Myron. What did she mean to me, Myron?
She meant everything.
To who?
Shoot me. Shoot me.
What else, Myron?
She was the joy.
The joy?
The joy of your life.
Now, apologize again.
I apologize.
What for?
She was everything to you.
That's true, Myron. She was everything to me. By the way, there's something you'll be happy to know. When I go back, I'll get Lowetson to handle my case. Just to make sure there's one he loses.
Hey,
Tonight, the Philip Morris Playhouse presented Apology, produced, edited, and directed by William Spear.
This is Elliot Lewis. I sincerely believe that the Philip Morris Playhouse made a wonderful contribution to the literature of the best radio plays by producing tonight's show by David Ellis, and I was honored in being invited to appear in it. May I thank Philip Morris for the opportunity, and may I thank my friends and colleagues who appeared with me.
Thank you, Mr. Lewis. And I hope you'll be among our listeners next Friday evening when the spotlight will be on Donald O'Connor.
I will, Johnny. Good night.
Good night, Mr. Lewis. This is Johnny again reminding you, go for Philip Morris!
Now, goodbye, Johnny. See you next Friday, same time, same station, when once again we will present the Philip Morris Playhouse, starring Donald O'Connor. Until then...
Go for Philip Morris!
The Philip Morris Playhouse on Tuned 2 yesterday from April 1st, 1949 on CBS, directed by William Spear and featuring Kathy and Elliot Lewis. Also, Johnny Raventini, otherwise known as Little Johnny on radio, with that perfect B-flat tone, putting out the call for Philip Morris Company products, and known as one of the most famous advertising men in history and one of the few in the world of entertainment or advertising to have a lifetime contract. It's an hour of drama on Tuned 2 yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levionier, and now the story of Dr. Kildare from April 5th, 1950. Lou Ayres and Lionel Barrymore starred as Dr. James Kildare and Dr. Gillespie in a string of motion pictures, nine to be exact, from 1938 through 1942. And years later, MGM Studios put their money behind a radio series. With the principal players of the films, we'll also hear Virginia Gregg and Lillian Bayef in the 26th episode of the series.
The story of Dr. Kildare.
Whatsoever house I enter, there will I go for the benefit of the sick. Whatsoever things I see or hear concerning the life of men, I will keep silence thereon, counting such things to be held as sacred trusts. I will exercise my art solely for the...
The Story of Dr. Kildare, starring Lou Ayres and Lionel Barrymore. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer brought you those famous motion pictures. Now this exciting, heartwarming series is heard on radio. In just a moment... The Story of Dr. Kildare.
Blair General Hospital, one of the great citadels of American medicine. A clump of gray-white buildings planted deep in the heart of New York. The nerve center of medical progress, where great minds and skilled hands wage man's everlasting battle against death and disease. Blair General Hospital, where life begins, where life ends, where life goes on. Well, I guess that's about all we can do for her until morning, Dr. Gillespie.
She'll be all right, Jimmy. She showed a good response to the stimulant. Parker?
Yes, Dr. Gillespie.
Parker, you'd better stay here with Mrs. Stanford for an hour or so until we have another nurse assigned.
All right, Doctor.
It's a good thing she had medical attention in a hurry. At her age, with a case of angina pectoris as bad as this, well...
Apparently, she didn't even know she had a heart condition.
No. The intern who went out with the ambulance said no one in her family had given her any kind of a stimulant. Didn't have any in the house, in fact.
Well, they better have some now, from now on.
Yes. Anybody who can make her frightened enough or mad enough actually holds her life right in his hands.
I'm Mrs. Stanford's nephew, gentlemen. Everett Ward.
How do you do?
This is Miss Lane, Deborah Lane, my aunt's companion and secretary.
How do you do?
You do?
How is my aunt?
Well, she's asleep now, Mr. Ward, and out of danger as far as this particular attack is concerned.
Oh, I'm so glad. We were terribly worried.
Well, reason to be, young lady. That woman's heart's in pretty bad shape.
None of us even suspected it.
Then her condition really is serious. I mean, there'll be danger from now on?
Oh, considerable, Miss Lane. She'll have to be carefully protected from any kind of emotional excitement. That is, anger, fear, that sort of thing.
Well, fortunately for her, my aunt is a very even-tempered person. Seldom gets upset.
Well, yes, I think tonight is the only time in 2 years that I've seen her actually angry. Of course, Miss Amy feels responsible for
the... Deborah, I don't think it's necessary to discuss the personal affairs of our household publicly.
I see nothing so very personal about it, Everett.
I insist that you drop the subject.
Insist? You know, I'm not employed by you.
While my aunt is incapacitated, you may assume that I am in charge of her affairs.
I see.
Gentlemen, I apologize for this contretemps.
I hardly see any point in my staying here since Mrs. Stanford seems to be out of danger. Is there any place open where I could get a cup of coffee?
Why, yes, Miss Lane. Sullivan's right across the street. Open all night. I was just going over there if you'd care to join me.
Well, thank you, Dr. Kildare. I'd love to.
Good. Let's go. See you later, Dr. Gillespie. Good night, Mr. Ward.
Good night, Dr. Kildare.
She's quite a lovely girl.
Oh, yes, yes. She's lovely enough. And apparently, she's made another conquest.
Kildare, you mean? Well, I guess he did have a kind of a glint in his eye at that.
Dr. Gillespie, that girl is a devil.
Oh, good morning, Dr. Kildare.
Good morning, Parker. Dr. Gillespie.
You're late. Coffee lover?
Coffee lover?
My Secret Service advises me that you came back to the hospital at 1:45 a.m.
Oh, I see. Parker?
Oh, good heavens, not me, Dr. Kildare. It was long past my bedtime when you came back from... That is, when you must have came back...
You have just hanged yourself.
Dr. Gillespie, I'll never tell you another thing as long as I live.
Sure you will, Parker. You just can't help yourself. Your brain consists entirely of tattletale gray matter.
Oh!
Furthermore, you're a congenital snoop.
Why, I... Oh!
You know, Jimmy, I don't blame you.
Blame me?
Miss Lane is a very pretty girl.
Oh, well, she's certainly a very interesting girl.
That's merely another way of saying the same thing.
All right, but she happens to be both.
Her employer's nephew doesn't seem to have quite the same opinion.
Ward? I guess he's been sitting around for years waiting for Mrs. Stanford to die so he can take over her fortune. Deborah can't stand him.
Deborah, huh? Apparently you've been making progress, Jimmy.
Well, I... Maybe we'd better go have a look at Mrs. Stanford.
Yes, 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 that's right. I'd almost forgotten about her heart condition.
Hmm? What are you talking about?
Merely thinking of one of the more basic facts of medicine, Jimmy. Whenever the human heart begins to act up, it always means trouble.
Gentlemen, I hardly know what to say. Of course, I've noticed pains once in a while, but a woman my age expects to have an occasional pain.
Well, an occasional pain is all you'll need to worry about if you'll just take care of yourself. No more arguments like the one last night, for instance.
Oh, I shouldn't have let myself become so angry, but Amy knows better. She knows how those things frighten me.
Those things?
Oh, didn't Everett tell you?
No.
Well, you see, my sister Amy lives with me, and last night I found it was something I had expressly forbid her ever to bring into the house again. A Ouija board.
A Ouija board?
Well, now, that seems like a harmless pastime.
Possibly for some people, but Amy has an obsession along those lines. She spends most of her time trying to communicate with the dead.
Mm-hmm. And as you say, this sort of thing frightens you, Mrs. Stanford?
Terrifies me. Apparitions, ghostly voices, I don't even like to think about them.
Well, maybe I'd better speak to Amy when I stop by to see you tonight.
Stop by to see me?
Why, yes. In a case of angina, there's no reason to keep the patient in the hospital after the attack is over.
Oh.
But I thought I would call at your home after dinner and see how you were feeling.
But, Kildare, you're not on duty tonight.
Oh, that's all right. I don't mind. It's no trouble at all.
I see.
You a Wood.
Mrs. Stanford, I think you can count on some very devoted medical attention from Dr. Kildare.
That's awfully nice of you, Doctor. But I do hope you won't scold Amy. She probably feels guilty enough already.
No, but I do want to impress her with the importance of not upsetting you under any circumstances.
Yes, Yes, that is something to think about. My life is in the hands of anybody who can make me frightened or angry. It makes you wonder.
Oh, good evening, Dr. Kildare. Come in, please.
Thank you, Mr. Ward. Well, how's Mrs. Stanford feeling this evening?
Much better, Doctor. Her sitting room is on the second floor. I'll take you up.
Thank you. Oh, but I'd like to see Miss Lane first, if I may.
I see. You're wasting your time, you know.
Oh? Well, it's my time, Mr. Ward.
She's a heartless, selfish little devil, Dr. Kildare. Nothing means anything to her except money. I'm warning you. Hmm.
But there's a question whether you're warning me for my sake or for yours.
Very well. I'll tell her you're here. Please sit down.
Quite a place. Mrs. Stanford must be worth a fortune.
Hello?
Huh? Oh. How do you do? I'm Dr. Kildare. I assume you're Miss Amy.
Well, yes, I am. How could you possibly know that?
Oh, just a guess.
They told you.
They?
Spirits. We have to be very careful. Nobody here lets me talk about things like that.
I see.
Tell me, are you a believer, too?
Well,
my sister's not a believer. Are you a doctor?
Yes, yes.
It was my fault, you know.
No, it wasn't your fault at all. You didn't know about the heart condition.
Oh, no.
But now that you've found out how serious it is, you understand the importance of not getting her upset again.
I wouldn't upset her for the world. Of course, I hope they won't be angry about it.
They?
My friends, Doctor.
Oh, yes.
They could cause a lot of trouble if they became angry, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Noises at night, all that sort of thing.
Yeah, well, let's hope they don't become angry then.
Hello, Jimmy.
Deborah.
Deborah said you were here. Oh, I see you've met Miss Amy.
Yes, had a very pleasant conversation.
Oh, yes. Well, I have to go now. If you'll excuse me.
You'll remember what we talked about, Amy.
Oh, yes, Doctor, I'll remember. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
She's really awfully sweet.
Yes.
Jimmy, I had a wonderful time last night. I'm so glad you came this evening.
Oh, good. Technically, I'm making a professional call on Mrs. Stanford, of course. Apparently, Mr. Ward prefers that I limit it to that.
Does his preference really mean very much?
Well, not to me. What do you prefer, Deborah?
That you don't limit it to that.
Well, I'd better run up and take a look at my patient.
All right, Jimmy. Come down to the study when you're through. I'll be waiting.
Right.
Doesn't mean a thing, Dr. Gillespie. Not a thing.
Doesn't mean anything. I suppose he's made a call at that house every evening this week because of his professional concern with Mrs. Stanford's heart.
Maybe.
Blah. Kildare has always been putty in the hands of a scheming and designing female. Putty.
Well, I haven't noticed him crying for help.
Ah, of course not. She's got him hypnotized. He doesn't even know he's drowning.
Well, personally, I don't think he is.
Don't think who's what, Parker?
Don't think you're drowning, Dr.
Parker.
That is, what I mean is that...
Pay no attention to her, Jimmy. You know how Parker is. Out of her mind half the time.
Well...
Jimmy, I was wondering if we could spend this evening going over the monthly progress reports together.
Well, Couldn't we sort of take care of it in the morning?
No, I'm all tied up tomorrow.
Well, I had a tentative engagement this evening.
Oh? Social engagement?
Oh, not exactly. No, I thought I'd drop by and see how Mrs. Stanford's getting along.
Oh, well, now, if that's what it is, just forget it. All she needs is rest and quiet.
Yeah, but you see,
confound that phone. Gillespie speaking. Eh? Oh. How long ago? Yes, of course. Right away. Goodbye. Come on, Jimmy. We're both going over to Mrs. Stanford's.
Mrs. Stanford's? But you said that...
Never mind that now. She just had another heart attack. Bad one.
She's beginning to come out of it.
Yeah. Pulse is steady and stronger now.
It was a close shave. Wonder what brought it on.
None of them seemed to know. She was apparently alone at the time.
No, go away.
Easy now. It's all right, Mrs. Stanford. Everything is all right.
Oh, Dr. Kildare, Dr. Gillespie, you're here.
Yeah, that's right, Mrs. Stanford. You just relax now. Nothing to worry about.
I was so frightened. I tried to scream. I was terrified.
Terrified of what?
Something. I don't know what.
What do you mean by something, Mrs. Stanford?
Oh, it was like a ghost. It was carrying a long knife. I could see it in the moonlight, and that's all I remember.
Well, anyway, it's all over now. We're here, and your family's outside there in your sitting room. So you just lie back and go to sleep.
Oh, yes, sleep. I'm so tired. But I'm so glad that both of you are here. It's all right now.
Come on, Jimmy. Well, what do you think?
Not the ghost?
Yeah.
I don't know, Dr. Gillespie. But I think we'd better find out. No, I think it's best that you don't go in to see her tonight, Mr. Ward. That none of you do, in fact. She's asleep now and shouldn't be disturbed.
Yes, I suppose you're right.
And in view of what happened tonight, it's Kildare's and my opinion that she should have a permanent nurse with her starting in the morning.
Well, just what did happen exactly? Everett sent me to the drugstore for some cigarettes, and when I came back, Mrs. Stanford had had an attack. What caused it?
Well, we didn't want to get her upset by questioning her. We were hoping one of you might know something about it.
As far as I know, nothing caused it, gentlemen. She was alone there in her bedroom at the time. I was down in the study. And I'm not sure where Miss Amy was.
Oh, I was down in the kitchen.
No, of course.
Really, I was. Not doing anything. Just down there, that's all.
It's all right, Miss Amy.
But I was, really.
Miss Amy, please. Anyway, I heard my aunt cry out upstairs, rushed up and found her in a state of collapse. I phoned the hospital, then did what I could for her until you arrived.
When you came up here to her room, Mr. Ward, did you happen to notice any sign of a ghost?
Ghost?
Now, wait a minute, Doctor.
I know, Mr. Ward, we're all reasonable people, but Mrs. Stanford says she saw a white figure come into her bedroom carrying a long knife.
I told you, Dr. Kildare.
Yes, I know, Amy, but...
I told you they'd cause trouble if they became angry.
They? Who were they?
The spirits, Dr. Gillespie.
Oh, yes.
They knew she was the one who made me stop talking to them. It was retribution, that's what it was.
Miss Amy, please, that's enough now.
You don't believe me either, Everett, but you'll find out. Oh, I've got to go tell them it wasn't my fault I stopped talking to them. They mustn't blame me for it.
I think maybe I better go try to quiet her. Please excuse me.
Yeah.
Gentlemen, I have a somewhat painful question, but I do feel it necessary that I ask it.
What is it?
Is there a possibility that my aunt may be suffering from hallucinations, a mental instability, as you might call it?
None whatever, Mr. Ward. If she says she saw a ghost, then she did see a ghost.
But that's ridiculous.
Maybe. But so is the idea that Mrs. Stanford is not of sound and competent mind, as I believe the legal phrase reads.
I don't know what you're implying, Doctor. But I wasn't thinking of any legal aspect. Naturally, I'm concerned about her. She is my aunt, you know. And, gentlemen, I think I'll bid you good night now.
Good night. You know, Doctor, I can't quite figure him out.
Jimmy, in your present condition, you're not in shape to figure anything out.
Present condition?
Yeah. Amatory catalepsy.
Oh, you mean
Deborah.
I mean, if I were 30 years younger, I'd probably be the same way. Now go on downstairs and stop trying to edge toward that door gracefully.
Well, as a matter of fact, there were a couple of things that I...
Yes, of course, of course. I'll stay here a while and check Mrs. Stanford's pulse a time or two before we leave.
Good. And I'll see you a little later.
All right, Jimmy, all right. Well, now, I never did get around to reading that book. Yeah.
Quiet. They mustn't hear us.
Well, Miss Amy.
I had to see you right away.
Well, here I am. So why don't you... Say, what's that you're holding behind your back?
Oh, you mean this?
A butcher knife.
Yes, that's why I came.
Why you came?
Yes. It was missing from the kitchen. I just found it. I thought that might mean something.
You know what, Miss Amy? I think I agree with you. Come on in. Come in. Shut the door.
Well, if you and Dr. Kildare really do back at the hospital, I guess there's nothing much I can say. Except I'm sorry.
Well, I'm sorry too, Miss Lane, but this is something that absolutely must be taken care of. Coming, Jimmy?
Oh, yes, that important matter couldn't possibly wait. I'll phone you tomorrow, Deborah.
Very well, Doctor. I'll go to the door with you.
I was wondering, Miss Lane, do you happen to know the terms of Mrs. Stanford's will?
Why, yes, I helped her make the first draft to go to her attorney's last year.
Oh.
Except for a small bequest to me and to her other employees, the estate is divided evenly between Miss Amy and Everett Ward. Oh, here we are.
You know, it's a little frightening to think of that much money in Amy's hands.
Well, it would only technically belong to her. The will appoints Mr. Ward administrator for her.
That's very interesting. Well, good night, Miss Lane. I'll send a nurse over the first thing in the morning.
Good night, Dr. Gillespie. Hmm. Good night, Jimmy.
Good night, Deborah.
Nice night, isn't it, Jimmy?
Mm-hmm. No. Yeah, great. Suppose you tell me what this is all about.
Oh, a combination of greed, the spirit world, and a potentially perfect crime. A murder.
Murder?
Mm-hmm.
In that case, what are we leaving for?
We're not.
Hmm?
There's a side entrance to the garden just ahead of us there. A stairway leading up to the terrace of Mrs. Stanford's sitting room. I left the terrace door unlocked. Of course, a slight risk is involved. A criminal charge of housebreaking.
Yeah, and don't forget that butcher knife. Be tired of sitting this long in the dark on a sofa, let alone behind one.
Well, if we're wrong and get caught here, we may find ourselves behind something a lot worse than a sofa.
The longer we're here, the more I suspect we are wrong. Miss Amy could have misplaced that knife and
Jimmy,
I...
Jimmy, shh, quiet.
Somebody in the hall outside. They're coming in.
Can you see anything?
No, I... Good luck. All in white.
All right, Jimmy, turn on the lights.
Right.
You can take off that sheet, Miss Lane.
What? Deborah.
I thought you'd gone hours ago. What are you doing here?
Well, I was waiting for you. Kildare just came along for the ride.
Yeah, I guess I've had one, too.
Jimmy, I was only playing a sort of joke.
Some joke.
Same kind you played earlier, Miss Lane? When you started for the drugstore and then slipped back up those terrace stairs? $100,000 joke, huh?
What do you mean?
According to Miss Amy, that bequest in Mrs. Stanford's will isn't quite as small as you imply.
Jimmy, you don't think that...
I have nothing to say.
All right. What are you going to do? Turn me in?
That's up to Mr. Ward as soon as we wake him up and tell him about it.
Well, go ahead, then. See how much good it does.
I'm sorry, Jimmy. I guess there's nothing much to say.
Oh, plenty. But thanks for not saying it.
One good thing, apparently, Mrs. Stanford hasn't waked up.
I have, though, Dr. Gillespie. How would you like to kick me?
Why? For being susceptible to the call of the wild goose? I only wish I were. Why, when I was your age, Jimmy, I was susceptible to every pretty girl who walked past.
Yes, but that's what worries me, Dr. Gillespie. When I'm your age, I may still be.
Ooh.
Well, that's that, Dr. Gillespie. One more month. One more progress report.
Yes, Jimmy, it's one of the dullest duties a doctor ever has. Confound it, you got to fight disease in the wards, in the operating rooms, in the laboratories, not on a sheet of paper.
Well, I suppose you can't run a hospital without keeping records.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's done. Oh, good morning, Barker.
Good morning, Dr. Kildare. I just picked up the new patient list from registry. There's one assigned to you, room 417.
417. What's the case, Barker?
Well, I don't really know, Dr. Kildare. It's here on the form. And here are two new ones for you, Dr. Gillespie.
Well, now, let's see what the gods have provided.
Oh, no. This is out.
What's the matter, Jimmy?
This new case in 417, Dr. Gillespie, you take it.
Well, why, Dr. Kildare?
Parker, you won't understand the reasoning behind this, but 417 happens to be a 22-year-old girl with a heart condition.
You have just heard the story of Dr. Kildare, starring Lou Ayres and Lionel Barrymore.
The story of Dr. Kildare on Tuned to Yesterday from April 5th, 1950. That wraps this hour of drama on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's yesteryear. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVillier. Thanks for listening.